Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF, our weekly public affairs program. I'm Jody Peterson, and in this edition, we're talking about services available on the Western Slope to help people who have some form of disability. We'll hear from state agencies and local organizations that offer everything from translation services for deaf people to assistance with finding a job. And we'll start off with an interview with Cindy LaJoy of Montrose. Together with her husband and family, she owns a pizza and ice cream restaurant called Buckaroo's, which provides employment for people with intellectual or developmental delays.
I'm the owner, in part with my husband and my kids, of Buckaroo's Slices and Scoops in Montrose, Colorado. And we are a pizza and ice cream restaurant, mostly takeout, and we intentionally hire people with disabilities. About two-thirds of our staff have disabilities, including three of my children who work here.
So I understand that you actually started this restaurant as a way to provide employment for those children?
Yes, we did. It began to be apparent 2 or 3 years ago that they were going to struggle to hold a job, that they have a lot of skills, but it was going to take an adapted environment to help them. And so we kind of played around with a bunch of different ideas and finally came up with this one. And ultimately, it was two of my three that are working here. It was their senior class project. So all three did everything here, including breaking down walls and building walls, and did the business plan, the marketing plan, costing out the menu, everything. So they learned everything from the ground up, quite literally. They even laid the floor.
Can you tell me a little bit more about their background?
So we have five children. All five of them are adopted from orphanages in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. The three that we were concerned about employment for have fetal alcohol syndrome. That causes a variety of problems because it's brain damage. It's also invisible, so they present quote-unquote normal. Yet the memory issues that they have, some of the delays, the slower processing speed at moments. Part of the problem with fetal alcohol syndrome is it's random. So what they can do today, they might not be able to do tomorrow. There's a randomness to it that makes it even harder and very hard for an employer necessarily to accommodate, because they're going to look at them as a regular employee. They function most of the time very well. But each one of our three struggles in a different area, and we thought together they make like one really good strong brain, and they agreed, and so here we are.
So how long have you been open here?
We've been open since the middle of October, and it's going pretty well. We're a little slow because of the winter, but we had a great opening, and we've got a lot of support from the community, which has been wonderful, and people coming specifically to help support the mission and ministry of the business, which of course really warms our heart. Many of our employees who do have disabilities came for their interview and weren't sure what they could tell me they could do. They hadn't been tested really, or had done maybe largely dishwashing most places. And I'm super pleased that some of the ways that we've adapted the environment and the way we've instructed, every single person is basically doing every single thing here. We have employees with Down syndrome who are making brownies and serving customers and can do everything on the cash register, literally, except for make the change. And so we partner people together to pick up the little slack where somebody can't quite do it. And that kind of thinking allows it to function a little differently, but to work really well to accommodate people.
So have you ever heard of any other kind of business like this anywhere?
A lot of people would be surprised to know that self-employment for people with disabilities is on the rise. And that's because the environment can be adapted to fit the person, or the career can be adapted to fit the person. If you can create a business that works around what you struggle with, you can be successful. Where you can't always be successful, walking into another system and having to fit in if something about you doesn't work the same as everybody else. The federal government is even working through some entities and agencies to fund opportunities for people to be self-employed. You know, there are some parameters around that to be able to get funding for that, you know, but it's sort of like job retraining, but there's possibilities for people all over the place to be self-employed. As we're seeing here, it can really work well. So hopefully more people will begin to consider that as they work with people with disabilities too. There are many people who can't imagine a future for their kids. And it's not because their kids can't do something. It's because they can't do it in a traditional setting is more the problem. And so I've had several people reach out to me and ask for details about how did we bring this about? How did we teach entrepreneurship to our kids? Hearing about us doing it and that our kids did it sort of as a team with a little bit of guidance has helped people think outside the box a little bit, which is what sometimes has to happen for people who are outside the box people.
It sounds like they're making something in the background there.
Yeah, Sarah right now looks like she's probably making brownies.
So have you found that there is the support that you need in terms of other resources from the community for your kids?
No, our kids actually with fetal alcohol syndrome fell through the cracks. A lot of the services are based solely on IQ. And if you have other challenges without the low IQ, it's harder to gain access to services. So there are a lot of kids, high-functioning autism is another one that sort of falls through the cracks. There are services through school, but once you're done with school, a lot of these young adults are left hanging, and they don't quite have enough to get over the hump of getting employment, true employment in other places, and they just sort of get stuck, and parents also don't know what to do. I mean, we aren't the only ones in town that feel this way, and so we've been able to help a few, and hopefully we'll continue to be able to hire people and help over time more. Get those first job skills, learning how to use a cash register, learning social skills to speak with customers appropriately and work with coworkers. All of that are things that if you don't have a chance to have that first job, that's where we all get it, whether we have a disability or not. And so hopefully we're providing space with somebody who gets that someone might need a little more help. And that's not going to put us off in terms of hiring them. So far it's been really successful. And we've heard from parents how the kids have already grown even just in a couple of months. And that's sort of, you know, the goal. So we're pleased.
If you're just tuning in, this is Local Motion on KVNF. And that was Cindy LaJoy of Montrose, owner of Buckaroos. We're talking about services available for people with disabilities today. And next, we'll hear from Modine Galke and Candace Coca of the Center for Independence in Montrose.
Okay, well, my name is Modine Galke, and I've been with the Center for Independence about a year and a half now, and I am the Low Vision Program and the Community Transition Services Program Coordinator.
And I'm Candace Coca, and I am the Regional Program Manager here at the Center for Independence, and we cover all of Region 10. San Miguel County, Gunnison, Hinsdale, Lake City, Ouray, Ridgeway, Nucla, Naderita, Delta.
So how is the center funded?
This is Modine again.
We are funded through grant programs from the state government and from the federal government. The way that we work is we have various programs, and each program has its own allowance under the grants.
And we have five core services, which is advocacy, peer mentoring. We do information and referrals. And so we kind of become the gatekeeper in between agencies. We don't want to overlap, but we also want to make sure that people are getting the opportunity to choose who they want to provide services. And then if we can assist in providing those services with the other agencies. So it's just a matter of having a good relationship, not based on who does what, where, and when, but it's all about the consumer. And then we also offer continued education, which means that the Center for Independence can teach you basic skills or maintain independence in the community. And that could be anything from improving your work skills, building resumes, supported employment. We do work with DVR, the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. So it could be any issue, let's say, pertaining to housing and how to apply for low-income housing or Medicaid and making sure that you are compliant. Then we also do transition services, and that could be from out of the nursing homes back into independent living in the community. It can be an individual who's graduating high school and hasn't experienced living on their own. It can be just transitioning in work in general. Let's say they have a gap where they had to take time off or they experienced some kind of medical condition that kept them from doing what they did before, and then getting them back into some kind of employment. I do a disability benefits, so I've helped individuals apply for Social Security disability and Social Security income.
This is Modine again.
And specifically what I do is rehabilitation. People who have low vision need to learn new ways of doing the same thing that they always did before.
How is low vision defined?
Low vision is defined by a visual impairment that cannot be corrected by glasses, medication, or surgery. We have basic low vision skills that we teach them, how it's important to have the the right kind of lighting. We encourage them to use magnification to the point possible. We sometimes are able to write grants for people to get magnification or other assistive devices that they might need. And it does help relieve some of the stress that they are under. Because when people can't see anymore the way they used to, and they have to give up their driving, and that causes them to have some depression, and they feel lost, they've lost their independence, then we try to work with them.
Here Candace is speaking.
A big concept for the Center for Independence is rehabilitation in independence. That's the main focus. It's not that we will do it for you, but we will help you as long as you're willing to do your part. We also offer services for the hard of hearing. We do have a hearing specialist that can set up an appointment, evaluate somebody's home, possibly with different kinds of alarms, bed shakers. There is also deaf interpreting services and support groups and other things that are offered to the community. There's just so many different things that we can offer to individuals, and the best part of it is it's completely free. So it's just a really nice service, and we start off by doing an intake to see what their needs are, and somebody has to be willing to be forthright in saying, yes, I have a disability, because that's what qualifies them to receive our services. Now, the information and resource referral, that's to everyone, but in order to qualify for those items that we talked about, they would have to say, yes, I do have a disability.
So do they have to have that disability documented somehow?
No, as long as they feel that that's something that they have that hinders them from, it could be anything that makes them
come in. From our observation.
Correct. And anything that they feel hinders how they function in the community with their family and in general. There is no time limit. We set goals with the individuals, and that's where we work on getting them where they need to be. Everything is goal-oriented with the individual, and it's at their pace. We don't put any pressure on them. It's that willingness to want to do this for themselves.
Do the services that you provide end up also benefiting the community as a whole?
The Center for Independence and Justin benefits as far as Social Security. Fiscally, we've been able to, as an agency, not just the Montrose location, but we've been able to help people receive up to almost $1 million in benefits that gets turned back into our community. And, you know, I don't think people really understand sometimes that there's that misconception of it costs taxpayers all this money to be on benefits. And actually, that's not the case. But if you, let's say, get them Social Security, they have an income based on a disability that they may have never been diagnosed. And it just keeps going into this circle of being able to provide income that can provide housing, that can provide, you know, a potential back into the workforce, you know, just so many different things that are positive.
Are there any particular success stories that you want to share? This is Modine again.
I can share one in particular. I have one lady who is in her 90s, and she wanted to have a particular type of a computer so that she could finish her research that she had started on writing a book on World War II. And so we worked with her and wrote a grant and was able to get a piece of equipment called a Da Vinci. And she finished her book, and she has written 4 books altogether.
Here Candace is speaking.
So for me, this is kind of interesting because I was a licensed child care provider. And knowing other providers, I had met these 2 small children who were in and out of foster care and had some serious behavioral issues based on some of the reasons why they were in foster care. And watching this individual grow, he had several things happen in his life that were damaging, trauma-wise, mental health-wise. And so he had fears of abandonment, being left alone. And he's in his 20s. And he could not find work. He's undiagnosed mental health, but to someone in society, they're just going to probably stereotype him as being very odd and unusual. And he's a very kind young man. He's just different, you know, and sometimes that's not very well accepted in smaller communities. But, and so he had told me that he had applied several times for Social Security and he was denied. So he came in based off of the process that we use and that I was trained. He was approved and he did get his Social Security, and now he's working on housing because that was one of his struggles, was being homeless and bounced back between not so good home environments, and he's thriving in the community.
If you're just tuning in, this is Local Motion on KVNF, and we just heard from Modine Galki and Candace Coca of the Center for Independence in Montrose. I also spoke with Casey Watts, Business Outreach Specialist with the State Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, about what help the state provides for people with disabilities who are looking for jobs.
Okay, so the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation is through the state, and what we do is help people with disabilities find and gain and maintain employment. And we also help businesses with a talent pool with people with disabilities as well. So we help clients and businesses. We have locations all over the state. There is the main office is out of Grand Junction on the Western Slope, and then we also have a satellite office in Delta, and then Montrose's DVR office service all of Montrose County plus Gunnison as well. With DVR, it is all about employment, so the person must want to and be able to work through the program.
Do you offer training for people?
Yes, if they want to go to college or a skilled trade and it is deemed appropriate for the current labor market conditions and so on, yes, they can absolutely go to college. Each case is different. So.
Is that something that's actually paid for by the state through this office?
Yes, the majority of it is paid through the state.
People that you work with have disabilities. Are they intellectual disabilities, developmental disabilities, just the whole spectrum?
There are all types of disabilities. You know, we have people that have been injured on the job and have had to redo their career choices because of that injury. So we help them maybe go back to college and find a new trade and help them gain employment that way. Or, you know, anyone with intellectual disabilities, mental health, developmental delays, ADHD, carpal tunnel, even, you know, there are the disability does need to be documented or documentable, and the counselor that they'd be assigned to would help them with that.
So how do you go about finding employment for someone who comes in?
When the client goes through the process and they work hand in hand with their counselor, usually they'll go through and they'll do a lot of assessments to see what you would be good at.
Once someone goes through that assessment, then do they go out and actually look for a particular position, or do you point them to particular jobs that are open?
So they would be typically assigned a job coach to help them with that. And then also, of course, the more a client is involved and active in their own case, they can also look as well. But a job coach will help them. A counselor will talk to me and I will go out to businesses and approach businesses about hiring the certain individual.
So when you approach a business, are they usually pretty open to the idea of hiring someone that has some form of disability?
Yes, most businesses are very open to it. And for instance, we do have Family Health West out of Fruta, which is a smaller hospital, and they are one of our strategic partners, and they hire people with disabilities, and they are fully on board. They understand working with disabilities. They are willing, more than willing, to accommodate.
So if a company does hire someone who's disabled, do they get any support from the state in doing that?
Yes, absolutely. There are a lot of different incentives for an employer to hire, such as the WOTC, which is the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. We can also pay the client's wages while they are doing a paid work experience. A lot of companies will find that a paid work experience really helps them plus the client, because the client may have been injured for an amount of time where they couldn't work for a couple years and need to slowly get back into the workforce.
So what is a paid work experience?
The state pays their wages for them. The employer only has to set the hours and help them. But for the majority of our clients, after the paid work experience is over within a 60-day, 90-day period, the employer will hire them on and put them on their payroll. We do pay for on-the-job trainings for employers as well. So there are a lot of incentives.
And do you work with other organizations in the community?
We have a lot of community partners that we work with to help people with disabilities go through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation to obtain employment. We partner with the workforce centers between Mesa County, Delta County, and Montrose County. We partner with SWAP. So SWAP, if you're not familiar with it, is the School to Work Alliance Program, and they serve youth from the ages of 16 to 21, and they are in the high schools usually. They work with youth that have higher needs of special education and so on, and help them gain skills to find and maintain employment. They're assigned a case manager, and a case manager will go out to employers, and they will get the employers to hire their youth while they're in high school. And also, we work with the high schools as well. I partner with the Special Olympics program too, so we work with them. Centers for Independence, all of these resources, Center for Mental Health, we are all actively involved and collaborate really well to help serve and make sure the clients have resources. We work with the Ability Connection, which is Social Security Disability, and we have a pool of people and resources, community resources that we can access. If we can't help them, we know who can. We reach out and make sure that the client has all of the resources available to them to help them be successful.
And what kind of challenges do you face? What are the areas that are the most difficult?
For people with disabilities, their challenges are transportation needs. The accommodations that they may need may not go with the type of position that they're looking for, or maybe the employer, although most employers will do whatever they can to accommodate, maybe it's not something the employer can afford to accommodate. My wish is that as a former small business owner as myself, that businesses will outreach to us so that we can help them with a talent pool, because when they've gone through our program, they're going to be ready to go to work. And we have a talent pool that has been assessed, and they're happy to go to work. They're going to be loyal. They're not going to be on their cell phones. They're going to show up on time.
Are there examples of people who have a disability but have found a job?
Actually, I'll mention Family Health West again. We had a young lady that had a traumatic brain injury from a motorcycle wreck, and her face was scarred. Prior to the injury, she was a radiological technologist, and after the injury, she was not able to work for a very long time and ended up putting her in a receptionist position to ease her back into work. And I got an absolute happy testimonial from her supervisor that she was doing well and they're working with her limits. And it's just a wonderful success story.
And that was Casey Watts with the State Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. Our final interview on Local Motion today is with Teresa Burns Fair, Executive Director of Mosaic, a nonprofit located in Grand Junction, which provides several services for people with intellectual or developmental disabilities.
Mosaic came to the Western Colorado area in 1986, and we currently provide residential services to people with intellectual developmental disabilities, including people with autism, in Delta, Montrose, and Mesa County. And those services are post-home type services where we find individuals that are willing to open their home and their heart to provide supports to a person in their home, and they receive a professional consultation rate for that. And then we also have people that live on their own and just need some minimal supports where maybe staff come in and assist with grocery shopping and menu preparation, attending their medical appointments, things like that. Also have what's called family caregiver. The state of Colorado several years ago approved that as a service, and that is where then they can remain as adults in their family home and receive their supports from a family member. They do have to meet all the regulations required by the state of Colorado to also be provided a daily rate for that support. We also have a day program type support where individuals join us Monday through Friday, and they volunteer in our community, they exercise, they have educational programs, they just do a lot of things in the community.
Are there other programs and services that you offer that you haven't described?
Also included in that is we do some what's called intermittent services, and those are some daily respite where a person might receive our support so that their primary caregiver receives a break. And then we also do behavioral supports where we do assessment and consultation in helping people with intellectual developmental disabilities that have maybe some socially significant behaviors find some replacement behaviors that are more socially acceptable.
Where does the funding come from for all of these programs?
So about 85 to 90% of our funding comes from Medicaid, and then the remaining percentage we do through fundraising.
And is there a greater need out there than what you serve, or do you feel like you're able to serve everyone who needs your services?
The biggest challenge is that Medicaid has a cap on resources, meaning that people that are eligible are put on a wait list, and that wait list currently is about 6 years long. We have 3,000 people in the state of Colorado sitting on that wait list.
Why is the wait list so long?
Well, there are several factors in regards to that. Funding, of course, in the state of Colorado has been really challenging for quite some time in trying to divvy up that pot of money for all the different areas of where people have needs. The other piece of that is that in the last few years, the current statistic is about 1 out of 37 people now are being diagnosed with autism. That's impacting that wait list because we have more people needing services.
What does the picture look like for support for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities at the state and federal level?
Well, first and foremost, we should celebrate that in 2019, the people with intellectual disabilities and those of us that provide their supports did receive a rate increase we haven't had in the last 7 years. And so we're celebrating that we at least got a rate increase, but unfortunately 10 years ago we had a rate decrease that we haven't even recovered from yet. Also, with the minimum wage increase requirement for Colorado, our current Medicaid rates do not even cover the costs of the wages now that it's taking for people to have those support. You might serve a person for an hour and you might receive $8 an hour, whereas now our minimum wage is way above $11 an hour. So that's what I mean by the fact that our Medicaid rates aren't even covering the salary costs that we have as organizations. We currently are advocating with the Joint Budget Committee and our legislators in regards to that wait list, and it's a program called In the Wait, and that's actually looking favorable and people looking to support that, and so we're excited about that. We're hoping to really make some big gains with some new laws in place to eliminate that waiting list.
And I understand the state has recently changed the requirements for who is eligible for services.
I always try to get the message out, and that is if people had received that they were not eligible maybe 5 or 6 years ago, there has been some changes in regards to eligibility in the last 3 years, primarily due to people with autism. There used to be a IQ requirement of 70 or below, but because so many of our folks that have autism as a diagnosis, their IQ is above that level. So the state of Colorado changed that. And so I always encourage people, if you were told, no, you're not eligible, about 5 years ago, that they should again reapply now because the laws have changed. We have some great partner organizations with the ARC, who in, I believe it's March, will be opening a thrift store that will employ people with disabilities, but also their program benefits people with that. A great organization called Discoverability, Colorado Discoverability, which is a recreational source and activities that are modified for people with disabilities. Through the Department of Human Services, there are other waiver-type programs, and what that means are other Medicaid programs that families might be eligible for. Perhaps they want to serve their person in their own home. They don't want a lot of other providers involved. And so there are other services that they might be eligible for that can be done in the family home. And I have to always do a shout out to Grand Valley Transit. Transportation is one of the biggest barriers for people with disabilities, and that has been such a great addition to our community for our people with disabilities.
And that was Teresa Burns Fair of Mosaic, and that concludes this edition of Local Motion. You can find this program and many others at kvnf.org. I'm Jody Peterson, and thanks for tuning in.